listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Martin Page.
Hi, I'm Mikey.
Across the table, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
Hello, Mike.
Next to him, we've got Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
And today, our special guest is John Dowling. John, welcome to the Audio Nowcast.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
John's an independent artist, has a CD out called Trials and Tribulations. You can pick it up at Best Buy. And John sent me an email, said he wanted to be on the Audio Nowcast, and we're not picky, so welcome.
I feel honored.
We just thought we'd get a free CD. That's what you did it for.
There we go.
And then I can't forget that we also have another guest here who was actually on mic last time, but sitting in, we've got Hezekiah McMurray.
Good evening.
He liked it so much, he wanted to come back for more. I don't know why, but I said, come on back. So
I think he fancied it.
Actually, it's pretty cool, and Hez is a good guy, and I've heard some of his music, and he does a really good job. So anyway, it's good to have everybody back. Pagey boy.
Good to be back, Mike.
I'm glad you're back.
Yep. Thank you very much for inviting me back as well.
Yeah, well, you know, we...
After all the trouble you did it before, me and Bobby. I mean, we're lucky that you have us.
Well, you know, the show just
it
wasn't the same without.
The listeners fled.
No,
said, oh.
It actually, it was better. No.
And mums.
No, but it's good to have you back. Before we get going, I wanted to talk a little bit of about technology, just a little bit, Martin.
Oh,
so don't get scared.
Wires and soldering.
Don't
and
get scared.
Headphones.
I picked up an app at the iTunes store, and it's called 4Track. And I thought of you, Martin, because this is something that I know you used to work with a little cassette deck.
He still does.
Yeah, and this is a 4-track recorder that is on the iPhone.
Amazing.
That you can record 4 tracks and playback 4 tracks and mix 4 tracks. So if you're, you know, out there just wanting to, let's say, comp a harmony or just do some vocal ideas, it's on your iPhone, and it has a really gorgeous interface. And I'll put a link to the website, but I just wanted to, as a songwriter,
yeah, very cool.
You know, if you're out there, you know what? And the name of the company that does this, hold on one second, is
Studa.
It's Sonoma Wireworks, but it has meters, it has the whole thing. It's just really.
So how do you get into it, recording wise?
You use the mic.
Oh, on here.
Yeah,
you call it from another phone.
That's how you call it.
Call up your mate. Can you do the harmony for us? That's amazing, mate.
But it's great. And
yeah, great for ideas.
Would you use something like that?
Yeah, sure.
Like if you were going to...
it's like a cassette. When you just want to jam and you just want to pick up a melody.
Yeah, and it's better than a cassette. It's 4 tracks. You can just hit one right after another, comp out a little
very
harmony.
Cool. Have you used it like that?
As a matter of fact, we're recording the show to it right now. No, I'm just kidding.
Had me going there.
We're getting very slick, aren't we?
Eventually, I'd say in a couple of years' time, we'd like to have a whole... tape machine to be on your finger.
Yeah, it's. I just think having the ability to have that musical sketch pad just with you all the time, and it was only $10. I mean, that's the best $10 I've spent.
Right.
Well, probably not the best $10 I've spent, but
it'll last longer.
You spent $10 in New Orleans, didn't you? When we were on tour, I remember that.
Yeah, tips don't count though.
The cool thing is you can actually I suppose you can upload the files, right?
Yeah, exactly. You can send them somewhere and things like that. And
so you could get good little recordings out in it, you know, like just fun stuff.
Well, it's a terrific idea if you just sat at the piano as well. And you can just do one track, then the second track, and you can sing a harmony straight away.
Exactly. Mm.
Yeah. And that's much better than having just one cassette. That's cool.
And blackmail, let's not forget that.
Yeah, of course. Definitely.
Just want to record and just.
That's true. You could be talking to somebody and just record them, couldn't you? It's out of the blue, they wouldn't know.
They wouldn't know.
Yeah.
So now when I see people with an iPhone, I got to say, let me see your iPhone before we start talking. But anyhow, so I just wanted to point that out as a good little songwriting toolkit. this show's going to be, that's it, Pagey Boy. That's all we're going
to
talk
about.
I'll
see you later then. Good to be here. It's really good to be here.
No, there's a couple things that we're going to talk about. But one thing that I wanted to start off with, though, is I wanted to talk to you, John, a little bit about your release. It's independent, and yet you're in Best Buys across the country. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and how this got recorded and how did you get the distribution?
Sure. Well, I grew up in a small town called West Springfield, Massachusetts, sort of situated between an hour and a half from Boston, about another 2.5 hours from New York City. So that was interesting in and of itself because it gave me a stable place to grow up and so forth, and then go to college in Boston and get a lot of my training and honing of my skill sets, et cetera, as a musician, songwriter, get the business aspect of the music industry, which we all know is so vitally important. From there, I went to New York City and duked it out for 12 years and probably arguably one of the toughest cities to live in and make a living.
In Boston, you went to Berklee, right?
Yes, yes.
And your major was?
It was music, business, and performance.
Gotcha.
So.
So you went to school to not only perform, but also to collect the check.
Yeah. So I guarantee some income distribution my way. So, yeah, that's a good point. And then, you know, went to New York and was actually was a drummer by trade. You know, did that for a while as a session musician, sideman. And back in 1999, I started writing a lot of my own songs from playing with a lot of people and getting inspiration. Martin Chief amongst them, and started
Thank you.
To. You're welcome. Thank you. And
hold on, let's just enjoy this love fest just for a second.
Okay, stop kissing me.
Bobby, hey Bobby, say something really nice about me, quick.
Actually, darling.
No, that's enough. That's enough.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's fine. Probably the most interesting part of the show. So I sort of had a crossroads where I realized, you know, I could either be a drummer for the rest of my life, which would be fine, or I could, you know, juxtapose into being a writer where I could use all the different things I'd learned from school and in the real world. And that's kind of how I based my decision. And a lot of those songs in the previous record, I think, built up to what you're hearing today. It's sort of, as Martin knows, it's an evolutionary process to as you grow as a writer, as a person, et cetera. Hopefully those two things marry well. And so a lot of these songs are over a four-year period that they took me to write. I had the really big privilege of working with some great producers on this record, John DiGrazio, mm-hmm. who's worked with John Mayer, Five for Fighting, Jars of Clay, et cetera. And then another great producer in Drew Manzano, who's worked with David Bowie and Lionel Richie and Brian McKnight. So that's the culmination of how this record came together. It was also years of transitioning from, you know, New York to L.A. and the life changes within that. The gaining of friends, loss of family, things of that nature. So there's a lot of, as any good writer knows, a lot of personal struggles you have to go through, I think, to really write rich music and, you know, and in the same time inspire people. And that's really the basis of what I work to do.
And currently right now you've got your single Out of the Dark, mm-hmm. and that's on radio, right?
Yes.
And you did it, and the radio was just old-fashioned making phone calls and talking to people and...
Absolutely. It comes down to great expertise of people who've been in the industry a while. I've got some really great radio promoters who are seasoned in it, know what they're doing, know the markets, know where I'll fit best. My niche is more what they call hot adult contemporary, right. Crossing over to AC main, and that's really the forte that they deal with. So.
Wow, that sounds like
the
story.
Yeah, they're still saying the same kind of formats that we had at that era as well, which is good.
Because you basically did your legwork for your In the House of Stone and Light, right? Just to get the radio and it kind of built.
I'm sure up. John's going to exactly the same thing. You know, it's there's a personal side of it that's really important, particularly to radio. And if you do put that energy in and you do really work at it and you do go and see the radio stations, you do play in the mornings and sing the old acoustic songs as we did. I mean, in a way, the personal touch, as you know, Mike, over a period of a year, then suddenly the record broke. It was the longest breaking record, I think, of all time. It just took a long, long time. But it was the radio stations believing in the artist, and that personal touch was huge. I mean, every time we'd get airplay, we'd send a card to the DJ and thank him for doing it, and then get to know them personally. So I think the personal touch, it happens a lot in country music, where the artists do promote themselves and they do turn out to play on the stations themselves. And a lot of pop artists weren't doing it when we were doing it,
right,
Mike.
Right.
But that adult pop format was really what I broke through as well. So, and it's the, where you'll probably find a mixture of great melodic pop songs still, you know.
Well, it's encouraging to see that, A, you know, you hear all these reports about the death of radio and things like that, but, you know, radio's still important, radio's still relevant. Mm-hmm. And especially depending on what your market is, and obviously in the adult contemporary, it's really, really relevant. You don't hear too many, you know, AC artists breaking through on Facebook, although I'm sure that'll probably happen one of these days. But
Well, you just mentioned John Mayer, you know, and there's a great example of it, crossed over all the way. But really, if you looked at that, where his market really exploded, it was that still that adult contemporary. Mm-hmm.
And now that you you've got on radio and you've got in Best Buy, what's your next step? Where are you looking to go with your album, with your CD?
Well, it's also on online, as I'm sure many artists have. I have that as well. The next step is to, now that we've had some, you know, commercial success, quote unquote, with this single, we're going to release another single off the record called Here to Stay. Because we've had success in tertiary and secondary markets, that allows us to take it now to major stations and then billboard stations from there on in, where my radio guy has some contacts. I'm going to be doing a electronic press kit in January so I can do some video to get to the media and kind of further that effort. I'm going to do a heavy rotation of playing in Los Angeles here at specific radio stations, as you said, and, you know, clubs and things like that where they specialize. And then working with an independent booking agency that books indie acts so that we can build a bridge to major booking agencies, get in with labels. John has a really good connection with Warner and Capitol and Virgin, so we're going to leverage those opportunities in terms of, you know, signing considerations as well.
Wow, so it's a pretty traditional approach as far as the performing and doing the radio to the release of your record. Are you putting a band together? Or are you?
I have a band, and I also have a pretty aggressive campaign online that to kind of complement the traditional approach with MySpace. Had a lot of luck with leveraging you know, fan bases that way and so forth. My market is not just adult contemporary, but it's very niche, which you'll appreciate. It's sort of a demographic of women 25 to 65, and then the men who follow along.
Cool. Any woman. Women.
Any. Yeah, any woman.
Any age.
Any woman will listen.
Female. Yeah. Yeah. Even if they're not really, if it's just questionable, it's fine. Long hair, really.
Touche. So, it's very much, as you'll appreciate, that the Phil Collins audience.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, the men show up because of the women.
Yeah, yeah.
So it works out.
As long as women are there, that's the main thing.
Exactly.
You know, that was speaking of that, I remember when I went on tour with you, Pagey Boy.
Don't mention that. Don't you dare.
No, it was really, really weird when you go into a club and you just see, you know, women. It was just mainly women were the audience.
Lovely.
Yeah, but coming from, like, you know, I've toured with heavy metal bands and things like that, it was really, it's like AC is a whole different ballgame. Yeah.
We didn't pay for those women to be there. That, we'll mention that.
Well, that's great, you know. I thank you for coming with us, coming here, I wish you a lot of success with your.
You obviously sound like you've got a really great game plan, and you've really got a lot of, you've really put a lot of heart into this. Mm. And you've got some good people around you, which is probably the most important thing, and you sound like you've really done a lot of homework.
Thank you.
Before you put this out, so we wish you the best of luck. Yeah.
Thanks so much.
And you talked about how you got to radio. How did you get to Best Buy?
Best Buy was a concentrated effort of, I talked about having a radio promoter who's great, but I also have a great publicist, combined with a record promotion team. They had some affiliations with people who sell specifically independent artists at Best Buy. So it was through a distribution company that is a major arm for Best Buy, and we were able to convince them to give me a shot, like, you know, put 500 units and spread it around the country, see how it would do, and then, if, you know, based on selling that, you know, perpetuate it further. So that's how we got in through a connection that way.
Interesting observation. I'm standing here just listening to you speaking. Of course, you're the songwriter and the artist, but how things have changed over the last
X amount of years, where an artist used to be an artist only. They would be stoned or whatever, playing their instrument, writing songs, doing whatever, and there'd be all this whole team working around them, and they really wouldn't know what was going on with radio promotion. Well, they'd just say, hey, play here, play there. And it's really weird that how the market's changed in all fields of all industries, massively the music industry, where you have to be such a master of all trades, not a jack either. You have to really know what's going on in a lot of areas to get it going. It's really hard. It's a lot of work. It's a lot more work than just being the artist anyway.
Well, yeah, I'd say it's more like, I'm sure Martin will concur, it's more like 70-30 doing business to the music. Right. But I think the upside of that, the upshot is that you get more control of your career and where it goes instead of being beholden to other people constantly, you know, because people used to complain, oh, I got to give an agent 20%, this and that.
Right.
I sort of have an interesting attitude about it, which is that I don't care if the guy gets 20% because that's $8 million on a $10 million deal I wouldn't have had.
Right.
But the thing is, before you get to that point, you've got to crawl before you can walk. So the more that you can do, it's more empowering for yourself.
So are you saying if you could wave a wand, let's just say, and somebody would come along and say, okay, listen, be the artist from now on, but we're going to sell a lot more records. Don't worry about it. We're just going to handle it. Or you'd be better off. I'm asking you as an artist sort of thing. Would that be a better way for you to – would you be happier doing that? Let me ask that. Would you prefer to be 100% artist and not do the business side of it much?
No, but I would rather have some hand in
– still have
maybe,
some.
Maybe not as much, but I still want to have my hand in it because you got to know – the right hand has to know what the left hand is doing.
Certainly.
You know, because you can't just – a lot of artists have that old approach that, well, he's providing me a limo and food and women and all that, but that's still coming out of your pocket.
Right.
You know, let the execs stay at La Triage and I'll stay at Hampton Inn because I don't need all that pampering. I'm there for the music and all the rest of it, so –
interesting.
Can live a lot more humbly.
Yeah, definitely.
I need that pampering, though. On the road, I was the one staying, and Martin was in the Hampton Inn, you know. Or the bus.
We looked after you, didn't we?
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it.
If I may, I just want to say on a personal note for Martin, because I am, as I told him, off camera and off radio, and he said...
It's not being filmed, is it?
It is now with that device.
That's right.
But idiot or not aside, I'm a huge fan of yours. And the song In My Room really had a huge impact on my life when I was going through Berkeley. And not because I could relate to the scenario, but just I could feel the heartfelt sincerity when you wrote that song. It was very, very
touching.
Thank you
very much. Thank you very much, John. I appreciate that. That makes it all worth it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Well, you know, that's a segue into what I wanted to talk about tonight. And our big topic that we're going to talk about is... Welcome back, Bob.
Mike, I'm here just to say,
no, what we're going to talk about tonight is we've done a little bit about this, but I really wanted to dig into this is talk about inspiration. You hear that buzzword all the time. You know, this inspires me, that inspires me. I was inspired to do this. You're my inspiration. And I want to talk about it in a couple different ways. Number one, we're gonna talk about what it is and what triggers it. But we're also going to talk a little bit about like inspirational traps, as I call them, and how inspiration can actually be a bad thing because it can keep you caught in a cycle that you may not be able to get out because you're so blinded. But right off the bat, you know, the definition for inspiration is. According to a internet dictionary, and you know it must be true, inspiration is stimulation of the mind or emotions to a high level of feeling or activity. And what do you guys think of that?
I agree.
Agree.
Yeah, great.
Great.
Yeah.
Check.
Yeah.
Next question.
See, but you know what? I think inspiration is a little bit more than that. I think... One thing that inspiration is it's something that triggers a longing, a wanting, a need to create. I think when you're a creative person, that's more along the lines of inspiration. It's that need. It infuses you with a need that needs to be satiated. It needs to be, you know, somehow you got to meet that need. And I think that's really important that people have to know what inspiration is before you can even use it as a tool. I mean, what do you think, Rob?
I think you've got some audacity to argue with an online dictionary about the meaning of a word. I'll tell you that. Kind of taken aback by that. I think inspiration is different depending on who's being inspired because you can be inspired to do anything or to do nothing. I mean, inspiration just means it helps push you along along some path. I mean, my feeling about inspiration, because I've thought about it a lot over the years. I mean, we've talked about it before. When I started in the music business, I was basically, you know, just a technology person for Stevie Wonder, and I was just, even though I was a musician, that wasn't my gig. I was helping with computers and doing software and that kind of stuff. And then as my career developed and I got to know him better, my interaction was more of a musical one. But I used to sit and watch him write songs, and he would be able to just flow with new songs constantly. He could sit down at the piano and sing a song, and you say, well, that's nice. When did you write that? And he'd say, just now. You know, and it was like somebody was just handing him this stuff.
Right.
And he was – what I realized is that he is just – he's able to be in a place, or is just naturally in a place all the time, where he's open to inspiration. He's always in a mode – and now I've known him for so long. He's always still in that mode where if something comes to him – it inspires him to do something with it, either to react to it or to write a song about it or whatever. But he's just open to everything around him. And I've learned a lot of lessons from that. I mean, if I'm looking for creative inspiration, I've realized you just have to open yourself to it being there, because it is there. You just have to, you know, react to it the right way.
Martin, what is inspiration? What is the actual – what is that thing? What is that tangible thing of inspiration?
I think it's really hard to nail down. I think it's a lot of it is in the first stage is enthusiasm, that when you're first, you know, the bug gets you, you're enthusiastic. For me, it was as a kid watching the Beatles on TV. Something magical happens, you just want to be affiliated with it, and it just that was inspiration to me. But something felt good. So to me, inspiration is something that initially feels good to you. You know, it attracts you. Because, and it's, for me, it was seeing other people do it ahead of me. So when I was about 10 years old, you know, I was in England when the Beatles were breaking, and so we saw it all the time. And that washes over you. Mm. And you're just, you know, it's not like you sit down and go like, ah, that's what I want to be. It's just that it moves you. It moves your emotions, and you're captivated by it. But inspiration changes as you go through your career, because you've got to get the tools. You know, you can't just be inspired and sit there and say, I feel inspired, but I don't know how to write a song. So you have to go through all the mechanics. And I found now, as I'm writing, my inspiration is very different to what my inspiration was when I was a kid, or when in the 80s, or right, as your career happens. But I think the initial gut feeling, the instinct of being moved by something that you primarily like, is inspiration. At first, then later on, it can be something that you don't, that scares you, or something that moves you, but it's got to inspire you. You know, whether it scares you, or you're writing about fear, or you're writing about something you've seen, and that happens over a period of time. But the first initial thing was just, for me, watching four mophead guys playing guitars on TV and just going, this gets me, you know, and that's where the inspiration for me started.
And what I, let me just add one thing. I think what makes an artist, because let's face it, millions and millions of people were inspired by the Beatles when they were starting, but not everybody was inspired to write songs. And what real inspiration does to an artist is it makes you create art. Mm-hmm. And so I think inspiration, everybody's inspired by something, and the true artist just knows how to take that and turn it into something.
Which comes back to what I was saying, that inspiration is, you know, it's something that triggers, you know, a need to create.
I'm still not going to argue with an online dictionary. No. Some things we just don't do.
I'm not saying their definition was wrong. I'm just saying that it's a little.
I think Bobby's vibe of women being is a great answer too. You know,
exactly. Yeah. Basically, that was it. When I saw a guy play guitar on stage and I saw these women throwing knickers, I was like, "That's it. What I want to do. I want to
play guitar.
That.
No, the knickers.
Oh, knickers. I thought he said nickels.
Knickers.
It's like, what kind of low budget show do you go to where they're throwing nickels?
Martin Page concert.
It's all right. I play football with him.
There's my wife up front here chucking him.
Okay, Bobby. What is? How would you define inspiration? What is inspiration? Not as what is inspirational to you, but what is the actual thing called inspiration?
I think inspiration is a spirit that's around us all the time, and whether we have the door open or not to let it in, or we have the right
we're in the right frame of mind to let it come through us or whatever you're doing. It doesn't have to be writing music or painting something. I think it's just whether you're in tune with letting it open up. And I think what you said about Stevie being massively creative or inspired all the time, he's just letting it flow through him. He's just an open person. I think when you're possibly, I don't know, as a songwriter or an artist, and like myself as a paid person that has to write music, sometimes you're inspired by fear. Like, I've got to deliver this by tomorrow, I don't have a clue what's going on. So, I mean, that's really true. But I'm sure, like, for an artist thinking, well, am I on, did my MySpace work? Is my manager going to get me on time? You know, so you've got all these things blocking the inspiration getting to you. But I think if you've really got an honest, and I'll use the word talent, but if you've really got an honest openness to take in a vibe that's coming through us, whether it's from a higher power or whatever, and just let it do what it's going to do and stop trying to control it. I think that's what inspiration is. I think a big problem is when we do start to get a seed of inspiration, we start, okay, let's control it, right? It's got drums and it's got, oh, if it's music, and we start to control it, and it kind of ruins it a bit.
John, what is this thing called inspiration? Not what inspires you, but what is the actual inspiration thing?
This is one of those subjects that could require a lot of forethought and calculation.
Yeah. You've got 3 minutes.
Yeah. I'll try to do that.
Fear.
Yeah.
Go. Deadline.
Go, you're done. I mean, just to kind of compliment the panel what they said, I mean, I think inspiration comes in many forms, and it's very subjective. It's very personal. I'm actually going to be contrarian and say that the dictionary, while rudimentary in meaning, is good, but I don't think it takes it far enough.
My, you know? My point exactly, and you're welcome here anytime.
Okay. I've kissed the right butt, I said. To me, it's a state of euphoria. You know what? When you hear something, whether it's music or poetry or whatever it is, that because everybody gets inspired by something differently, not just in the music business but in life. For me, it's like when I hear it and I have to suspend whatever I'm doing to give it my full attention and just, you know, zone in. I look at inspiration much like a connection with people, as an analogy. So we meet people every day. Some people we connect with better than others. Why? Who knows? There's many reasons for that, but it's just inherent of our natures. You know, James Taylor, when I graduated from Berkeley, he said something that I thought was pretty inspirational, so to speak, no pun intended. He said that, you know, people always wonder, why does rock or rap or jazz, why do these different idioms connect with one person or another? And he said, because it just reaches you in your soul. Some things connect and other things don't. So we can think about it deeply or we can think about it simply, but I think inspiration comes from what excites you or inspires you or gives you fear or motivation, whatever that is for you. For me, it's a state of excitement, what moves me and picks me up. When I still remember hearing Bruce Hornsby's Mandolin Rain when I was 12 years old, like you had with your epiphany with the Beatles, and it just stirred something inside of me. I didn't analyze it and calculate it. It just moved me. And then from there, you can dissect it. And I also think inspiration can be traditional in the sense that you can always go back if you're not being inspired, if you're in a rut and you need to remind yourself what started you in the first place. It's good to go back to those artists, whether it's the Beatles or for me Bruce Hornsby or The Fix or Phil Collins, and go back and remind myself what inspired me and tap into that, because, you know, inspiration can be cyclical. It you know, we had so much of it in the 80s, we had a little bit in the 90s. Personally, I don't think we have a whole lot today, and that's driving me to inspire me to write greater songs, because I want to be a voice for a new generation that has the absence of that, unlike what I was fortunate to have as a kid. So for me, that's one example of inspiration.
Well, now that we have a definition, a big cloudy definition of inspiration, what we're going to do on this podcast is I want to help people, you know, not only are we going to define inspiration, but we're going to show people how we take the inspiration and actually act on it and actually have it move into whatever we do that, you know.
Our big joint means.
wrong show.
Oh, there's a big fat edit.
Actually, Bobby was talking about Bob Marley then in general, weren't you? A lot of reggae has been inspired from.
Nice save.
Good save.
And not a bad person to judge inspiration.
No, that's true. That's true.
Not a bad songwriter. Done a couple of tracks.
Look at Sgt. Pepper. I'm not sure they're all here.
Have not been.
You know what? We're going to. There's some creative
may not
editing.
Be an edit anymore.
I can make it
may
work.
May not be an edit anymore.
Yeah.
Because what I'm saying is, you switch it off. You're switching off the gates a little bit. I'm not saying you should partake, but I'm just saying it.
And actually, it'll fall in the line with what we're going to get into next is triggers for inspiration. So what I want to do on this podcast is provide people with a way to take this thing called inspiration and to actually put it into their own creativity. We're going to do that right after we take a break. So we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by AFEX and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking about inspiration. And, wow, you guys just need to wake up. That's very uninspiring.
I thought it was very good, actually.
No, right, I'm not talking about what you said. It was great, but right now everybody looks like they're just tired and stuff.
No, we're very serious. No, we're very serious.
We're awaiting inspiration.
So. Yes.
All right, well, let's talk about, now that we kind of tried to define inspiration, let's talk about triggers. Inspiration is a feeling that makes you want to create or makes you want to react, or it's a, what did you call it, Bobby? Like a force that you have to be open to, or a...
Yeah. I think.
Well, anyhow, what I want to know is let's talk individually and get, you know, kind of personal. What are some of the things that trigger the inspiration in people? Like, for instance, in a couple sentences, what triggers your inspiration? You know, watching Stevie, obviously, is it trigger?
Well, in the beginning, that was, I'm talking about in the early days, he taught me what it's like to be open to inspiration. But as the years have gone on, I mean, like Bobby, I've written a lot of music that involved deadlines, and I used to call it forced creativity. You know, they want something that sounds brilliant and original and beautiful, and they need it by Thursday at 2:00. And a lot of times, you know, something cool may not come to your mind by Thursday at 2:00. And as time goes on, I've had to learn how to kind of create my own inspiration if nothing else was coming. And generally for me, it's a change of scenery. Like if I'm sitting in the studio, if I'm sitting at the piano for hours and something is not coming, I'll just get up and walk around the block. Or actually, I learned this technique. I was working with Michael Jackson. It was in the mid-90s, and it was for stuff for the History album. And we were writing together, but he would come and go from the process, and I would constantly be needing to come up with bass lines to present and melody lines to present and beats to present. And I found that just by sitting in the studio, because I was trying to generate so much material, after a while it was all starting to sound the same. And, you know, I kind of liked the sound, but I felt like I wasn't being original constantly. And I just started this ritual where I would just get up from the studio and go out to the street and just walk up and down the block and just look around or you know, just try to put myself into a completely different headspace. And every time I would do it, on the way back to the house, something would hit me. And actually, it was funny because it would always happen right about where the trash cans were on the side of the house. And the joke became, years later, as we're writing music for commercials and stuff, my writing partner used to say, it's time for a walk to the trash can. Because it was that act. It was the act of getting up from the seat, going outside, getting some fresh air, and just freeing your mind, especially as computer-oriented as we all are now.
Right.
To have all those screens in front of you and all the blinking lights, there's some pressure there, even if there shouldn't be. And just getting out and clearing your head will open you up to new inspiration. And I think what I learned from Stevie is that there is a way to get into that openness without having to physically get up and walk around. But that's what you're always trying to aim for.
Martin, when you're writing, what do you do to help get you in the mood for being receptive for some inspiration? Or what triggers your inspiration?
Well, the word you use in trigger is an interesting word because these days – it's art that gets me going these days. You know, I can be reading a poem or reading a book or anything that's artistic. I get turned on by, you know, if it's Pablo Neruda's poetry, I'm turned on. And I get sort of lost in it. I really get lost. In the early years, it was more to do with, as the lads were saying, that you have deadlines and you just want to get good at your art. So my first triggers were listening to music I just loved. and marveling at it, you know. So I would sit and, you know, listen to Joni Mitchell and think, amazing how beautiful this is and how well recorded it was. So for me, it was all through my life, because I was such an addict for music. It's all been inspired by other artists. When I haven't felt like I'm writing something which is unique, I'd do exactly the same as Rob was saying. I'd get in the bath and just, you know, move away from it, have a cup of tea, walk, you know, play football or something. Just do something else. Then it's amazing. And even tonight, coming to do the podcast, as I'm working on a new song, but I play it for 2 weeks in the car, different roughs of it, as we were saying with your little four track, rough cassettes, rough this, rough that. And I just play it in the car when I'm not forced in front of speakers, forced in front of screens. And lyrics start coming on, and you'll be hearing the track differently because you're looking at something differently. But I'm constantly playing music all the time. Inspiration has changed for me. In the early years, it was trying to follow what other people did and what inspired me. Stevie, Earth, Wind & Fire, Commodores. Just, I wanted to emulate it. And in the later years, you tend to just want to do what you think you need to do, because you get old enough to go, I want to say something that I feel is personal. And so my inspiration now is going to the art gallery. I can look at pictures or, you know, walk into a field and think that there's something I have that luxury of writing something that I want to write and not feel like I'm chasing something.
Right.
So that's, but the trigger is different in every situation for me.
Bobby, what triggers inspiration?
It's a good question. I'd have to give you two answers. If it's for work, specifically paid to work things, it's right. Generally I have to sort of listen to, if I have to model it on something I'm writing, then I've kind of got a strong trigger, you know. I mean, it's, right. And again, it's not really inspiration. It's more like a
whip.
Yeah, it's more like a juggling of a regurgitation of other people's ideas, I'll be honest. When it comes to assignment writing, it really is. But if it was more on a creative sort of thing, I'd definitely get inspired. There'd be something in the music or the track, or I'll be playing around with something, and it could be something as simple as, you know, I don't know, an offbeat on an instrument that just gives me a whole vibe, and I just go, you just lock into the magic of the music thing will actually give you more inspiration, and it'll feed back on itself, and you'll just get into a craze for hours and just lose track of time, and that's really what it is. It becomes more of a manic.
I think Bobby's it's triggered me on just thinking that you have to be there to do it. You know what I mean? You have to either be singing with a cassette player, or you have to be listening to music in a car. You have to be in it. So half the trigger is going forward and walking down the staircase into the studio. You have to trigger yourself.
Even when you have a block, and I'm sure, of course, we all do, you know, a lot. Sometimes you, as much as you sit and go, I just hate this, this is all crap, and you just can't play one chord. There's even nothing. But if you just keep thumping at it, and if you keep, you know, and then listening to something you really like, I'll put on, I've got another separate computer other than my music computer, and I've got YouTube on or something, I'll dial up a track I used to love or anything,
just
to break the ice. I was listening to Supermax the other day, 1979 track, and the bass player and the drummer was just grooving together so bad, and I was doing it like a track for television, but it was just the groove and the feel of it. I was just like, man, there's two notes these guys just played, and it was like, gave me such a vibe to go off and do something with some strings. So I'm saying, you can just, It's there. You just got to open. You go, okay, that's the vibe.
And actually, over the years, you learn, I think, how to trigger yourself to a certain degree. Like Rob was saying, you learn what tools you need, and you say, okay, it's time for a bloody hot bath, you know, or to walk towards the trash cans. You learn over
experience. It has to be the right trash cans.
Yeah.
You know, there's just one other thing I want to add is that something we haven't touched on is your sound palette. You know, if you're a keyboard player,
it's very true.
Most synthesizers these days have a billion sounds in them. Chances are you haven't heard them all. So just even going through some sounds you've never heard before can just trigger so much inspiration.
That's a great point.
That's a big point.
John, really quick, what for you? What's a trigger of inspiration? What triggers inspiration?
Well, for me, like Martin, I have the good fortune of writing for myself, so I'm not against the time clock. But ironically, I would say time just like people say, letting a fine wine age, it gets better. I think sometimes when you get an idea, just sitting on it and letting it ferment is a big one. I enjoy people watching. I mean, like, one of the things I had the ability to do in New York City was, as you know, is go on trains and just, you know, wherever I was going, so long trips, just study people, study ideas, study tendencies. You know, people say, you know, where do you get your ideas for songs, or how do you learn how to you know, articulate what you've got to say? I'm like, watching you, watching other people. A lot of these songs are not about me. They're about people I know or people I've seen. It's kind of funny. There's a song here on the record called Stress Sandwich.
Yeah, so
and it's sort of a funny, so it's a funny alliterative take on the stresses of life that we all have every day. We don't have to take ourselves so seriously. We can make fun of it. I was on the D train going from Brooklyn to Manhattan one time. I'm sure you know that route. Mm-hmm. And I just got this idea in my head for my mind is a blender. I just thought it was funny, you know, and I thought, how can I build a song around that? And instead of trying to force the idea, I just let it come to me over time, mm-hmm. and I built around that one line, and before I knew it, another idea came and another idea came. So people always say, you know, do you get the idea for music from music first or lyrics? And it's completely situational. But I think people studying and the powers of observation is a powerful tool in triggering inspiration.
I think inspiration for myself, it's pretty simple. There's certain things that trigger me to be in that moment where you can be receptive to getting the creative juices flowing. And like things like, are there certain people in my life that definitely are trigger points? And I have this term that I use. It's called living in the blue. It's almost like when I need to get inspiration, I need to put myself in a point of almost like a heartache, like a longing type of a vibe, because I find when I get into that mode, it really inspires me. I'm really receptive to moving forward. And so there's certain people that I can think of that can get me there. There's certain times in my life that definitely help put me in that mode, but it's almost like I have to be, you know, the trigger isn't necessarily triggering the inspiration, let's say. The trigger is putting me in the mood to be receptive to creative thoughts and to creative things. And it's not necessarily music either. Like, for instance, even the podcast was, I was driving home and, after one of the NAMM shows and wanted to do, you know, I was talking with Rob and the history of the podcast is, you know, basically started with Rob and myself and Larry going to dinner all the time. But on the way home, it's just, you know, I was just in this really, you know, reflective mode and I got to that point and then it just, boom, all these thoughts started. Hey, why don't you start a podcast? Yada, yada, the whole business thing, the whole thing. And it just kind of rolled into something. So, you know, inspiration for me, it's almost like a life thing. If you get yourself in a certain place, a certain, you know, if you get into this blue mood, you know, it's some really.
So you have to be suicidal before you feel
it. It's not.
That's why he's got that mic cable around. Either,
well, he's you know to be suicidal or spend a lot of time with me, apparently. Either way.
The thing is it's, you know, I'm so. You know, life is, you know, I'm a pretty happy guy.
All these people could be listening thinking, I need to depress myself before I can get something out.
But, you know, but there are definitely people, but there are definitely people who need to be, you know, they need to be a little blue to be receptive. You need to be,
I think you have to be, yeah, I mean, being sensitive to everything, including your own emotions or whatever's going on in your life or whatever's going on in the world. As part of it, you can't open just one door of creativity and say, "Well, just let ideas come in, please."
Sure.
It's like open.
Well, let me. Well, go ahead, John.
No, I just wanted to interject on something you said about before when you were defining inspiration. You were talking about sort of like the way I thought of it as portals or windows of inspiration. You hear a melody, you hear a line, and do you listen? You know, it's like God is talking to you through stimulus, but are you listening?
Right.
And most of the time, we're immersed in computers and all this, you know. Information overload, you know, analysis paralysis, that we miss the moment. And so as I've developed as a writer, I'm sure Martin can attest to this as well, I've learned how to capture those moments better because there's like a little window and you either capitalize or you lose it.
Well, that's a question I was going to ask you guys, everybody, basically. Do you ever find, I do, and I find sometimes inspiration is a burden. And I don't mean it, I mean, I'm always grateful for it, certainly if you have a deadline. Mm. But I don't know if you guys, sometimes you're like, I'll be doing like a track for TV or something, but I'll come up with some other cause, I'll say, oh, that's actually cool. Oh, I really should work this out. And I'll go, oh, no, and it's more like a burden. You're like, oh, really? Does anybody else feel like
that? No, totally.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
I feel like, oh, I really should. This deserves more time, but you don't.
I've been in mixes where I've been mixing something, and I've been inspired by something that I've mixed in to go in a totally different direction. Like, you're mixing, and now I want to go and sit at the piano or something. Mm. It's just, you know, and it's in your brain. Or how many times have you worked on a project that you were inspired to write the music or the song, and you can't let it go? Even when you go to bed, you still hear mm-hmm. it. You still hear mm-hmm. things. You're still thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it definitely can go into to overdrive. Question I want to ask you guys is, now we've all talked a little bit about what inspires us, and we've talked about what inspiration is. What do we do with this? How do we? I mean, we've all found a way to take this inspiration and channel in it into different things, but. You know, I know there's people out there that get inspired, but they don't do. And what's the key? How do you get that inspiration? What specifically do you do to let that inspiration come out? Martin, like, when you're writing and you're inspired and you see a beautiful painting, do you go home and you start putting chords with thinking about that painting? Or do you just think about the feeling that painting invokes and pick up the guitar? How does that work for you?
It's what you said, the word feeling. I think you feel. You just feel. And you are, using that word again, inspired and encouraged to find the joy in it. And I don't mean joy in, like, oh, this is just so, I'm so happy with this, but the joy of pursuing something. For me, if the air and the color and that intangible thing, the feeling, is there. And it's a great joy. I mean, I'm lost in it. I don't know that's the only thing in my life that I don't actually know that I'm living when I'm writing or recording. Everything sort of stops. And it's a kind of, mystical place, you know, without it being, I don't mean this in a religious way, but it's a mystical place of losing yourself. And you just get all excited. You get excited even if it's a sad song. You get excited because you know in your gut that you're onto something. That's that I've known over, and I mean, it wasn't like this when I first wrote.
Sure.
It takes years. And then, but you start to trust yourself and you go, I know I'm onto something. I'm onto something that feels right. Nobody has to tell me it's right or wrong. There might be a wrong chord here. There might be better melodies, but I'm on the hunt of something that tastes right.
So when you're inspired, do you head for the piano? Do you head for the guitar? Do you start singing?
It's as John was saying, it takes you in different ways. I sometimes can just see a title or hear a title or feel a title, and I'll write that down and say that means, and it can be really oblique. I can say this is an Egyptian song about the desert. I don't know, it just feels like that. There's a secrecy in this, and there's a darkness in it. But the rhythm should be up. It's speaking to me. You can take a photograph and you can see something and just say, there's a song in there. But I'll either go, this is a rhythmic song, so I'll go towards the drums. But usually for me, it's the chords. Usually I'll sit down and play chords.
But that's,
usually either guitar or keyboards. I tend to like to go to keyboards for pads more.
So that's cool. So basically, if you see something and you know that's a rhythmic thing, then you go to your drum machine or whatever.
I get a cassette recorder and I put down this cheap old cassette recorder I got from Radio Shack, and I'll start singing and jamming, all phonetic. You just do it. And then you leave it. Then you go and have a cup of coffee. You come back and you play it and you go, that's happening, and I need to do it now on a multitrack. And I'll do it, on a multitrack. And then I'll go back, and I'll listen to that and say, I can't really write words to that because it feels so good. Mm. They have to be sounding like this. And the moment, as Bobby was saying, you start to put words in, excuse my French, you lose it, you know, you've got to get that. You've got to get that. And you've got to get the words that say, you know, walking with my soul or something, because it sounds right. That's come from out here.
Absolutely.
And you've got to capture that, and that's what I'm doing. That's what I've been doing the last two albums, is capturing, you know, Havasupai by Shaman and House of Stone and Light is only says Havasupai Shaman because I went, yeah, man, sumo, yeah, man. That's why. It's Bob Marley. It's where it feels right. And it's dusty there. And it's deep red there. Anything else gets brighter and shinier and window and glossy.
Right.
You've got to capture that because that's what's in your chest, and other people will feel it. Even though you might be a little bit not running the mainstream, ultimately over time people will feel that. And that's how I think Bob Marley, Paul McCartney, Hey Jude, you know.
That's the best, check
the lyrics out for Hey Jude. It happens as he's at the piano.
That's the best way to go.
Phonetic vocals are the best.
It's the best. The one thing Paige said is massively important. With all that, just on the sidebar of this, is the technology. He sat down with an old cassette machine.
Yeah.
I can't tell, and I love computers, and I'm absolutely great, but as you know, you must have no technology when it comes to this, because if technology slightly
gets in the way,
if you get a crash come up or something, it's the biggest, and I can't swear, but it is a complete up. And you just got to have the thing that works all the time.
And in fact, in the last song I'm doing, like Bobby's saying, there's an acoustic there. It's out of tune. I play it.
Done.
Even though it's out of tune because the rhythm's happening.
Done.
And then you listen back a month later and go, it's a little out of tune, but the feeling is,
magic.
I can't get that again. Mm-hmm. And that's the space you've got to do. So I do a real rough kind of haystack of a track. And that haystack is really cool because that's the demo, but it's really the master. Yep. And then you just fiddle around and go, well, this can be touched. This needs to be a bit sharper or that. Do vocals, like Bobby was saying, instant, you get a melody, instant.
And with the same vibe in your head.
And the vibe.
Because you're in a state. When you sing that thing,
totally.
Your voice sounds different. You won't do it the next day on a Neumann. You won't do it the same. You've got to do it now. That's it. That's the magic of it.
It's all like it's living in the now.
Oh, yeah. It's capturing what we don't control.
It's the greatest
it's
joy.
It's challenging what we don't have.
The hardest thing after is coming back and knocking it in the
shape.
Because the greatest joy is when you do and you go, I'm here, it's happening. Yeah. And then after, you have to step back.
That's when you wish you could just hand
skill.
It off and say, do this for me. Yeah. I just don't want to do it.
And there's a skill of saying, I need it to be rough still. And that's another balance.
That's horrible balance.
Yes, I leave that.
Rob, what about you? What's your process?
Well, actually, my process is kind of similar. The thing I was going to point out that kind of underlines what Martin was saying, though, is my feeling is that there's a lot of wasted inspiration out there. You know, everybody gets inspired by something, but not everybody's inspired to do something
with it,
to create. And so the trick is to figure out for yourself what process works best for you to put down, you know, as well as you can to try to capture what the inspiration is saying to you. And, you know, a cassette deck is a great way to do it. Anything that's as low tech as possible, whatever has the least chance of crashing.
Right.
Right.
Well, that's an awesome thing. Yes.
That basically is going to be the most, the tool that's going to let you just focus on the creativity. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, I have to think differently if I'm on a deadline than if I'm just creating something for the sake of art. But there's nothing wrong with letting the inspiration take you someplace other than you thought it was going to.
Right.
You know, put down every idea. Tape is cheap. Hard disk is even cheaper. Just put down everything, because as soon as you say, no, I'm working on this specific song, or I want to do something like this, you really just limit your possibilities. And the trick in that creative moment is to just do whatever, you know, whatever comes to you.
That's it.
Because
not be too much the producer at that point.
Yeah.
More of the guttural element, you know, production come later.
Right. I mean, just blurt out as many ideas as you can. You can become an editor afterwards. You know, it's much easier to be a good editor when you have great stuff to edit. So just put out as many ideas as you can.
It's massively, I mean, it's so important to exactly what you guys are saying, is to just let it go. Because directly, there's one side of your brain kicks and says, oh, no, hang on a second, maybe I should try this. It's ruined it. You've just...
Right.
Then your brain's changed.
You got to be in the moment. You got to be now. John, when you get inspired, what is the process that you use to transfer that inspiration to something creative?
Yeah, I was thinking about it as these guys are articulating their viewpoints and what gets them going. I was always a big fan of English and literature in high school and college. So, you know, I always gravitate towards, I mean, obviously music, but also the combination of music and lyrics, which Martin knows all too well. So I look at the process very much like writing a book report. You know, you get that rough draft, you just let it rip. Don't analyze it. Don't overthink it. Just let it come out. Because then you're going to go through an editing process anyway. And then you go through, like when you write a book report, you filter, you get the bad grammar, bad spelling, all that stuff. You hone it down. So, you know, for me, that process would be, you know, piano and keyboard, since that's my principal instrument. And you were touching on a fact before about, you know, playing certain chords and things. Sometimes you ever notice you're playing chords and you come in with a precept of certain chords that you're going to play from what you're hearing, but then the chords you actually play, maybe you play a wrong note and you mess it up, but the chord that you ended up with is better than what you started with.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to sometimes just go with that and you know, don't be so – have so much rigidity about it. It has to be, you know, one formulaic way. So there's inspiration within the inspiration, if that makes sense. So then you polish it down. You get to the final product and edit and production, all the rest of it. But I think for me it's much like a book report. You know, sometimes I'll start a song with a line, like I – with example, a Stress Sandwich. Other times it'll be a melody, and I've got this – certain thing, I guess, because we feel so deeply as artists that I have the good fortune of things will ferment in my head for months, weeks at a time. I mean, you know, Out of the Dark was in my head for a year and a half before I actually wrote it. And when I wrote it, it came out in a matter of a week. But people say, oh, you wrote that song quick. No, actually, it was a fermentation process. Mm. And the more I thought about it, more other ideas came, et cetera, et cetera. When I wrote the song, it didn't even have a bridge until I worked with John. And then he said, okay, I love it, but you need a bridge to finish it. And I wrote the bridge in 2 weeks because most of the meat of the song was written. But I had more and more time to think about it. So it goes back to, I think, you know, time and sort of like a process like a book report where you do it in sections. The key is, though, for me anyways, to not overanalyze it at first. Because you're always going to hone it down later. Right. A lot of artists I find try to write in a certain way, and they try to keep it in that box. And they think if they don't maintain it into a box, it's a failure. Instead of letting the inspiration within the sub inspiration happen.
Now let me ask you guys. By the way, this is all fantastic. You know of how to take your inspiration and move forward. But let's talk really quick about inspirational blocks. Just tell me what's one of the big buzzkills for inspiration for you, Rob.
I think I am.
I was gonna say yeah, same. If somebody asked me, I'd say me. You always stop yourself.
I think for me the biggest thing has just been when I've been on too many deadlines. You know, I'm pretty good at forcing the creativity and, you know, meeting the deadlines and on things that just seem impossible. But after doing that for a long string of projects, I do start to shut down. I mean, I really do need to take a trip or just get away. Actually, for me, even just changing the gear is, you know, changing the equipment can be an inspirational thing because all of a sudden you have different tools and different sounds. But really, there have been a few times, especially when I was doing a ton of trailers for Sony where everything had to be a giant orchestration. And as soon as one was over, there was another one lining up. Actually, the Godzilla campaign was 87 separate TV campaigns all based on the same theme. So I came up with a theme at the very beginning and then had to do 87 different versions of it. Jeez. Towards the end, I mean, I still hear it in my head.
That's an inspirational killer right there.
It was. Yeah. But, so wait. But that was because someone else had put constraints on me.
Was it like somewhere around 62? So 62 was the buzz killer then.
What's that?
Version
oh, yeah.
No. Okay.
And you know what the funny part? The theme for the Godzilla trailers, which no one realized until it ended up showing up on fan sites later, but it was actually a melody that went like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's right. How it started, which was actually Morse code for SOS. Because I was trying to find inspiration for what would make people nervous that an orchestra could do. It's da 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 dash 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 da da da. I syncopated it because you know Stevie connection. It's da 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 dash 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 da da da. But so the whole Godzilla campaign, I wanted an orchestra to make an audience nervous, which it did. But after a year, it made me really nervous too. So I had this Morse code, like giant symphony Morse code, going in my head for a year, and it started to drive me nuts. And then when that campaign was over, everything I wrote sounded like SOS. You know, it started to really get to me, and I had to take a break. So I think that most of those blocks come from within.
Bobby, tell me something besides coming from within. What's a inspirational killer for you? I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, your gear not working or...
Yeah, well, yeah, technology would definitely be up there. I mean, definitely. You must have answered it for me, yes.
Technology?
I think if you're using a computer to record stuff, and I do use a lot of MIDI and I do rely on computers, and you play a track and you're grooving on it 1 minute because we're so, you know, up and down in our emotions all the time anyway. You go, yeah, this track's grooving, and you turn around and you tell me, hang on, is that late? That sounds out of the pocket. Hang on, is this thing crashing? And then and that's a groove killer.
Oh, you just gave me shivers.
It's hard enough to write anything, obviously, you know, but it's hard enough to come up with a track and an idea, then produce it, but then the technology kicking your ass all the way down the line, it's like, oh, just shoot me now.
Well, like in the days when sequencers, when the audio and the MIDI wouldn't be locked in sequencers, so you record
them. I'm still in that day. Okay.
Nightmare.
Pagey boy.
You know, I think it's the same thing. It's based around the same thing as the lads were saying. You know, you want to get an idea down, and you got to tune the guitar, and the guitar string breaks. And one of your speakers is distorting, and you have to go and have a look at that. You know, because I tend to work on my own a great deal. So that does slow down the process, and it does make you get out of the mode. So I tend to try to have everything all very near and ready to go so that I can – and rough, so I can just get the first spirit down. But We touched on it a little bit. I think when you're going to write, you have to be in a kind of, a meditative kind of mood, whether it's an up-tempo song or whatever it is. You have to be sort of psychologically getting ready to do it. So for me, it's like you have to walk down the staircase and say, I need to be in the studio, I need to be around a piano, and I need to be near the instruments, and I need to be there, because as you get older, fatigue can definitely say, I haven't got quite the same energy. So you have to make yourself say, I'm going to be in the situation where what comes to my mind, I can get down. And so one of the biggest obstacles is making yourself get in that studio and get a result, and be the deadline to yourself to say, although I'm not being pushed by anybody, I'd like to see another record come out. I'd like to finish a couple of songs by this period of time. And I think that's one of the things that I totally always have to push past, is to say, we need to do it today. Let's get going,
That's a hard one. That's a hard one to do when you don't have a whip. Somebody whipping you.
You have to have an inner desire.
But I do know, though, you've got a great work ethic, though, and probably that's where it comes from, because I know when you're disciplined, you go in there and you shut everybody
out. Yeah, I do. And I'm very – I think that it is interesting as well, is that once I get in there, I don't want to come out. And that's another thing, is because you don't want to spoil the magic and that place where you want to be. I've talked to Bobby about it. I don't think there's a bigger delight. I look forward to those days when you sit in the studio for 3 to 4 days and you think you're making Dark Side of the Moon and you're lost in there.
And you forgot how to shave. That's good.
So it's good. So you're not returning my phone calls because you're in the studio.
No, that's
right?
Just you, Mike. That's
what I thought. Because when I call
all the time, I don't know, leave me messages.
Because
when I took the dog for a walk today.
Because when I call at 9, Martin, are you still in the studio?
Yes. Yes, I am, Mike.
Sorry. John, what's a block to inspiration for you? What just totally kills it?
Well, for me, it's actually ironic, because it's the same thing that inspires me: people and negative energy. Like if you're out and about and you get inspiration from people in a park or something, that same energy can be used in an adverse way if somebody negative gets up in your face or is having a bad day or just wants to dump on you or whatever the case may be. Or like when you're in the studio and you're really getting into rhythm, the phone rings or emails come in and you're trying to be diligent, but you really need to focus and, laundry and errands. And then those things at the same time can be inspirational too. So for me, it just, you have your good days, your bad days. And I think it's just whatever mood you're in at that day and how things are going. Like if the day starts out well, you're going to get a good, kickoff to things. And adversely, if it's not, sometimes that's hard to counteract as well. You have, like Martin said, you have to have a really good work ethic and just focus down and bear down on whatever it is you're doing. So sometimes it's not as much inspirational as the need to do it. But sometimes society can be its own buzzkill a little bit.
And sometimes you can be in the studio. I'm sure John would agree with this. And you can sit there for the first hour and feel like, this doesn't feel like it's happening. I don't really want to be here. But if you keep on going, all of a sudden, you're there. Yeah. The river opens.
There's one other thing. It's a bit of a buzz killer. I don't know if in the next morning got syndrome. But you come back in, you go, last night was killer.
You're right.
Went to bed at 4 o'clock. And you switch on, you got the monitors turned up, and you go, it just sucks.
You go, what was that?
What was that?
You're right. That is so true.
Yeah. And you backed it up. You're like, you thought it was so good, you went to drink coffee before you went to bed.
Another thing just to add to this, and I'm sure maybe you can feel this too as well, Martin, is sometimes we're our own band in our head. We can hear whole rhythm sections or symphonies or whatever the case may be, or arranging and orchestrating a song to sound. We've got a very definitive idea of how we want it to sound, and sometimes when our bands don't play it exactly the way we hear it, to me that can be somewhat of a downer, because you're trying to get – you want them to be their own creative outlets, but at the same time you want them to play their style in such a way that complements what's in your head. And when they don't always do, and you have to like, no, it's more like this, or it's this chord, or it's this tempo, or you're trying to play an up-tempo song and the guy's like dig-a-dig-a-dig, and you want them to be like dig-a-dig-a-dig, and it's not going fast enough. That can be sometimes a challenge as well.
I agree with you as far as a real big inspirational buzzkill is people, because people suck. They do, man. They can really get in there. They can really get in there.
You
and
need
just
to
do
have a few animals around
there. Absolutely.
I'm serious.
A big beast.
You can have a couple of cats around you as you're riding.
Absolutely.
No, they're not. And Bobby's got a lovely big dog. No. I tell you, it's very.
He's got six.
I'm serious.
Beasties.
I'm serious. Very spiritual.
And plants,
very spiritual.
Yeah. Plants and nature got to be.
And you'll
really,
be able to look out the window.
There's nothing worse than when you're working on something and somebody comes in just from the outside and just sits down and tries to take over and that's for me, that's the biggest buzzkill. And Hez is laughing because he's had that situation happen before, but that's a real big buzzkill. And it's funny because for me, you know, people are really, you know, I get a lot of inspiration off of friends' success. When I see someone doing really well.
What are you doing sitting with us in?
No, it's really, it's.
And he chose us.
No, but it's really.
He said friends, though.
Oh.
Wow. We're just going to go.
Did I step in the art class of self-deprecation
You don't know, we're trying to help him because he likes to feel blue. So
oh, okay. We're okay. trying to inspire him. This is actually by design.
He's going to headbutt him in a minute.
I get really inspired by friend's success. You know, I mean, first time I saw Rob's studio, not even the one he has right now, but the one that's that his old studio. It was fantastic. It was inspirational. And like Bobby, when you were doing the game show and you're out there leading the band, and me and Martin came to visit you.
Laughed
and
I saw you guys.
That was yeah. great. I mean, and even Martin, you know. Touring with you, and when we nailed the show, it was awesome. I mean, people for me really inspire me. So it's obvious that people just can also ruin it. I mean, I get inspired, like, you know, I'm a real big Googler and I like to Google friends and people and just, you know, see what they're up to. And I Googled, an old friend of mine and, up popped up some headshots and, she looked great. I mean, she looked really good and was reading a little bit about bio on the back and looks like she was doing some really great stuff. And just the fact that here was somebody who was just really doing something with their life and was moving forward and just looks like they were just had a lot of success. It's inspiring, especially when you know backstories of people and you know where they've come from and you've known how they've, through their own tenacity and through their own just determination, that they've pulled themselves up to, you know, certain levels. It's really inspiring. Success is definitely inspirational.
It's good about people because, you know, when you're playing in a gig and the audience isn't responding.
Oh, that's true.
That's a buzzkill. Yeah. You know, and I will say one thing. I do have to agree with Mike that people suck for the most part. But collaboration is often a way if you're not feeling inspired or want to try something different. I mean, collaboration, we've talked about it before. It's a tricky thing. You have to have the right person. But collaboration can make you think in a way that you never have before. And also trying a different instrument, even if it's an instrument you don't play well. I mean, I'm completely keyboard-centric, but every now and then I'll try to pick up a guitar and just eke out a few chords. And you write completely differently if you pick up a different instrument. So there are definitely ways to break out of it when you get stuck, but none of us had touched on collaboration. And collaboration, at times, I've had good and bad experiences, but when it's been good, it's been pretty good.
Yeah. I tell you, it's something beautiful about when you have a bunch of smelly players just getting together and they're just grooving, and it's the vibe. You know, everybody's in the pocket. They've been playing for a couple of hours. The room's hot. It's the
rhythm, yeah.
It's just there, and you're cutting tracks, and that is really nice. But one killer is when the A&R guy comes in and goes, okay, let's hear it from the top guys. And I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Everybody just goes.
I mean, you make a good point, Bob, about collaboration, because that sort of touches on what we were talking about before. It's, to me, that's like a pleasure pain syndrome, because you get the creative outlets from somebody who brings a fresh perspective, which is of course great, but then not always, but sometimes there's the instance where that other person wants to control the percentage of how much they write and then the publishing, and so you get that you know, good cop bad cop sort of mentality. So
it's really hard to have a collaboration relationship turn into something that is as comfortable as working by yourself, but it can happen. Sure. I mean, I've had the same writing partner for 19 years now, so that's a
good point. With that is, I found as well, like if I say let's get together and write something together, I always say at the onset, listen, we talk about this now. Whatever we do tonight, even if I do absolutely nothing, go and make tea and you write it all, or I do write it all and you make tea, we're doing this together. So let's just say it's 50-50 down the line. Because it does. I mean, if there is any of that business shit, excuse me, business stuff come into the writing, it just ruins it. It really does.
Yeah, because that can be a buzzkill.
Because then you get like somebody saying, "Well, let me write the verse." And you're like, no. You know, I mean, it's like,
"Well, I'll take that off your hands."
Yeah, you owe me six words.
That's just the worst.
Well, hey, gang, we got to wrap it up. We're running out of time.
What a buzzkill you are, Mike.
All right, we're going to wrap it up here on the Audio Nowcast. So it was great, talking inspiration. I think it's really important because there's a lot of people, like you were saying, Martin, there's a lot of inspiration out there and people just don't act on it. And I think inspiration is one of those things that everybody talks about, but nobody knows what it means. And even if they know what it means, they don't know what to do with it. Hopefully we've given some tools. Martin, you said some great things about how to take that inspiration and actually make it into something. I think there's, when you see a lot of these intense creative people, I think it's their inspiration just, the throttle is just stuck, and it's, I firmly believe that some of the artists that have killed themselves because they're so intense and they find suicide is the only way. It's because maybe they're just stuck on overload with the inspiration and they just need to satiate it and they couldn't find a way to satiate this need, this creative need. And in the end, it destroyed them.
You really know how to end on a high note. That's great.
I got to get everybody in the blue so we can all create.
Mission accomplished.
All right, gang. Well, just look around you. Life is good. How's that?
There you go.
Let's all be inspired for greatness. And I'll be inspired not to have Bobby and Martin back at the same time. Hey, before we go, Rob, can you talk about anything or
anything?
Rob should disclose he's got a new business.
I have
video.
Oh, only if you're going to talk about it.
Is this the video that was seen on YouTube recently?
The famed one.
Oh, Bobby's going to have to talk about it.
This is legendary. I can talk about it.
You can talk about it?
I can talk about this because I've actually seen it.
Wow, okay.
And I was very moved by it. It's a very, very special piece. And I believe that Rob did some tremendous editing on a rapping duo, a female and a male rapping duo. It has to be seen to be believed.
It does.
What's the name of the actual video, Bobby? That's on YouTube now.
It's under Summerfield Music, YouTube, Summerfield Music.
Yeah, but you just got to go there and see it. It's not much more to say.
YouTube.com/Summerfield Music, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You get to...
It's profound.
It is profound.
All right. I want to put a link to it. Now I'm curious, I can't wait. Yeah. Bobby, besides the video, have you... Are you working on anything you can talk about?
Yeah, I can talk about everything. I'm doing a bunch of stuff. Bunch of promo tracks, advertising music for TV, and a couple of dance tracks and two orchestral tracks. That's it. And other than losing a lot of money in the stock market, carry on.
But after this video is seen, he may be doing a lot of that.
Maybe more of that. Getting the headshots.
John, what about you? Your album's out. You can pick it up at Best Buy, and do you have a MySpace or a website? You want to plug those really quick?
Sure. My official site's just John, JONDOWLING.com, and then MySpace.com/JONDSMusic, because somebody took my name, so I had to get creative with an acronym there. I'm actually working on 15 new songs for my next record called Long Days, Long Nights. I'm always trying to be like one step ahead. That helps me with inspiration too, by the way, just to always keep moving forward and what's the next thing, so you don't stagnate where you are. Working on the band, we're going to do a lot of regional tours in the area, do some casinos and things like that within California, and just pursue, getting signed and trying to be a headliner, hopefully, for John Mayer would be my goal.
Great. Pagey Boy, I know you have you finished your second album?
No, I'm on the two last songs at the moment, and I'm enjoying doing it and experimenting, but I'm writing like a banshee at the moment and enjoying it. So I'm writing. That's what I'm doing. I'm just writing.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to say, but you played me a snippet of one of the tracks, Smoking.
Oh, thank you, Bobby.
No, you did.
Thank you. Yep, just writing, and what we're talking about here, just losing myself in it. So it's good.
Great. Great. All right, well, if you have any questions or comments for any of the guys on the podcast, you can reach us at... audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. I fixed the email so you don't have to use mike@westwaveaudio. Hey, well, thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast. And before we go, I just wanted to tell everybody that on the next podcast, Joe Ciccarelli, the producer, engineer, guy worked with Zappa, he did the latest White Stripes. He's going to be with us. So.
Great.
Wow. How'd you pull that one off?
Magic. Mm-hmm. Now, he's a nice guy. He's like the nicest guy in the music
business. We'll change that.
Well, Martin, you've worked with him, right?
Yeah, I did. I worked with him when I first came to LA. We did a Bone Symphony record, which is a dance band for Capitol. And I found out about his work when he was doing work with Zappa.
All right.
He does some great stuff.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for listening. And for myself and all the guys, we'll catch you next time.
For listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.